Hi, guys. My name is Tommy. I'm a grateful recovering alcoholic and addict. So I'm a little nervous right now. It doesn't matter how many times I do this, but, I'm very passionate about my program and recovery, and so that's kind of what helps me get through this. So let me start with my sober date's August 9th of 2015. I just hit 3 years, and that was only by the grace of God. I'm going to start just by telling you where, you know, how it began, how I got here, and where I'm at today. I'm a proud member of Alcoholics Anonymous and of Austin Recovery Alumni Association. This place saved my life. I have continued to come back out here. This is where I find peace. I get to see the newcomers come in and actually, you know, work this program, and I get to help and guide, and that's what my life is about today. So I was born April 3rd, 1970, in Galveston. My mom was 17 years old, single. My father had gotten drafted to Vietnam, so he didn't even realize that I existed until he got back. I was about 2 years old. When I was born, I had problems with my feet and my ankles, and the doctors never thought that I was never going to walk. So I spent a lot of time in the hospitals. I wore casts and braces until I was about 5 years old. And as a result of my mom being a teenage mom, I went home with my grandmother. My mom didn't have the ability to raise me. So my grandmother is who raised me until I was about 10 years old. She passed away of cancer. She was a year older than I am now when she passed away. And she was the only mother that I really knew. My mom was kind of in and out, and didn't really form a relationship with her until later. Before my grandmother got sick, from the time that I was about 6 until I was about 10, 11 years old, I was sexually abused by a family member. And I wasn't the only one. Later on, I found out, my cousin, which was his daughter, was also being abused at the same time. So those were some challenges that I went through young. I moved to Austin when I was about 11 the first time. My mother decided that she was going to take me because my grandfather couldn't take care of me after my grandmother passed away. And that's kind of when my life hit a lot of turmoil. I bounced around between my mother, one of my aunts, one of my uncles. I lived with my father for a short time. So between the ages of 11 till I was about 16, when I finally moved to Austin permanently, I mean, I can't even remember how many schools that I went to. And I started using, the first time I used was I smoked pot at 12 years old with an uncle. And I remember how that felt. I really enjoyed it. I laughed, had a good time, and I really liked the way that felt. And it was, you know, kind of an escape. And that's when I realized, looking back now, that was a turning point for me. I started using meth when I was probably about 14 for the first time. I met my son's father when I was 16, and shortly thereafter started using meth on a regular basis. I got pregnant with my son, who's now 30, when I was 17 years old. You know, and it was a pretty rough time for me. My uncle that had been abusing me actually had committed suicide when I was about 16. He had come out. The family found out that he had been abusing several of my cousins. And, I still remember one of my uncles coming here from the valley when all of that came out, because CPS got involved. And it was his daughter that actually had told her mother what was going on. And my uncle had come to me and asked me not to say anything because CPS was going to be contacting me. And so that was pretty confusing for me. You know, they knew what was going on, and they didn't know what to do. I mean, and I can look back at it now. I was really angry. I had a lot of resentments towards my family, towards my mother, because I just didn't feel like they protected me. And so when he committed suicide, I mean, it was really devastating, you know, in our family. But I ended up getting pregnant with my son, and, you know, that was, I quit using drugs. I mean, at that point, I was using meth. I was drinking on a regular basis. I had dropped out of school. I was just lost. And so I didn't use. I managed to not use while I was pregnant, but the day after I came home from the hospital, his dad had some dope, and I used, and that was the first time that I actually started shooting up, and so that was a whole new world. I used with him for a little while, and finally I was about 19 and realized that we were getting nowhere. The only thing we had in common was our drug use. I had gone back to school, got my GED, and I was going to a trade school because I wanted to learn something. I did not want to, you know, have to. I knew I needed to do something to be able to make a living. But I left Bryant when I was 19 years old, and shortly after that was when Sean and I got together. And we had decided that we were going to stop using meth at that point, because it was just, I couldn't keep a job. I mean, it was, I ended up finishing that trade school that I was in, and just to become an alcoholic. I just substituted one for the other, started drinking really heavy. But I thought I was doing good, you know. I wasn't using dope. Still smoked pot, still did whatever else I could get my hands on, but I wasn't shooting up, and that was a huge deal for me. You know, I went through my 20s and my 30s, and we didn't use any powders, basically, but I drank, and there was periods of time that I drank heavier than others. I would stop for a little while. I mean, I had my daughter at 25. My oldest daughter. I had my youngest daughter at 30. And so there was those periods of time that I didn't use. I was able to stop using when I was pregnant, just by the grace of God. It was hard. I was a miserable person. It was really hard. But I did it. You know, my life, when Sean and I were together, I mean, I was very high functioning addict. I mean, I ended up falling into the career that I'm in today. And I ended up getting my real estate license. I worked for different real estate companies, and, you know, was able to get, you know, make a good living. And I was just very, very high functioning. You know, I used to smoke a lot of pot, and when it came down to when I started doing real estate sales and needed to have my bearings, I mean, I knew that I couldn't smoke pot all the time, so I had to stop doing that, and then I would just smoke pot, you know, late at night before I went to bed. I mean, you know, so there was just that thinking that I could manage and control, and I did. I did pretty good for a long time. But and it wasn't until after our divorce that I found meth for a second time. And I found that you could smoke it now, okay? We didn't even have to shoot it up, or we didn't have to snort it, because it was pretty hard to snort sometimes. And it took me exactly 3 years to hit my bottom. I came into treatment in December of 2014. Let me back up. We got a divorce, and Sean ended up in treatment a year after our divorce. And I saw him. He started making these changes. I was still managing. I remember being very upset and very angry at the fact that he couldn't continue doing what we had been doing for 20 years. And what was wrong with him, and why couldn't he keep doing this? But he hit his bottom. He was tired, and it was his time to go through treatment, and I saw him changing and doing these things. And I didn't understand. I remember he would talk to me and tell me what I know today from working this program, but I just didn't even understand it. I stayed with the house. My daughters were still at home. My son was in college. And so I managed to keep it together for a little while. I still kept my job. And I had a job that I didn't have to be in the office. I was working for a company, and I didn't have any set hours. I was on constantly for them. And so I worked a lot, but was able to maintain my family, help my daughter get into college, and it was shortly after that that I really, my drug use got really, really heavy. And I still remember, it was after Michaela went to college that things kind of went downhill. It was soon after that that my youngest daughter, Marissa, knew. She'd found my shit. Things just started getting kind of chaotic and crazy. I wasn't going to the office quite as much. I wasn't working quite as much. And, my drug use just got out of control. And she made the decision one weekend to go to her dad's, and she didn't come back. That was the hardest time. I can look back on it now, and I'm grateful that she had the strength to walk away from me. She knew that I was not doing well. She knew that I wasn't, I wasn't taking care of her the way that she deserved. And so I'm glad she had the strength to walk away. And Sean was living at a sober house at the time, and they voted and they let my daughter stay there at that sober house. It was in Oxford, and they let her stay there with Sean while he was able to get an apartment and do everything he needed to do to get a place for them. I think it was in May when she left. I was in treatment by December that year. I lost my house. I wasn't working. I lost my job. I almost got arrested, because at this point I was dealing drugs then. I mean, I was getting ounces at a time and selling and to support my drug habit. And obviously, I wasn't paying my bills, right, because I lost my house. So it purely went to my drug use. I look back at it and I thought it was okay. It didn't seem. I was angry at Marissa for leaving. I guess she wouldn't talk to me, and I didn't know why she had left. And I felt like I'm her mother. Why won't she talk to me? But today I know that's that sense of entitlement because I am her mother, right? I'm entitled to nothing when I'm not taking care of my children, you know, so I ended up in the hospital in November of 2014 from shooting up. I had a miss in my arm that the doctors told me that I could lose my arm when I first got there. Sean is the one that I called at 4 o'clock in the morning because I didn't know who else to call. And I told him I needed to go to the hospital because I didn't know what was going on. And I remember he was on the other side of the... All he said was, are you ready to tell them what you've been doing? Are you ready to change what you're doing? And I told him yes. So I spent a week in the hospital after they told me I wasn't going to lose my arm. They still needed me there because I needed to be on IV antibiotics to clear up the infection because there was still a chance that I could die if it got into my organs. Or in my bloodstream, it could get into my organs. And so it was in that hospital that I made the decision that I was ready to change the way that I was living. I was there probably about 3 days, and I remember I started crying, uncontrollable. Crying because I didn't know how I'd gotten myself to the point that I'd gotten. You know, just a few years before, I had this family. I was raising my children. I had this job, you know. I had a husband. I mean, how did I get where I was at? I had no earthly idea. The nurse sent in the chaplain. And the chaplain came in and sat down with me. And I remember being, I was at, it was Brackenridge at the time. It's right there on 15th Street in MLK. I was sitting at the window just crying. And I had been alone. I didn't want my kids to come see me. I didn't want my family to come see me because I was so ashamed. I was so ashamed of where I was at. And she came in there and she held my hand and she asked me, she's like, what's the matter? And I told her, you know, I said, I'm lost and I don't know where to go from here. And I told her some of the things that I was doing and how bad I felt. And I felt like I wasn't, you know, am I worthy of better? And what she told me was that God was with me. And God loves me. And if you're ready to change what you're doing, he will be right next to you to help you and guide you. I called Sean and I told him I wanted to get into treatment. He got me into treatment. He called Austin Recovery and they got me, they put me on the list. They told me I could get in. This was going to be the beginning of December. I came in December 15th. I ended up using before I came in. I was high as shit when Sean came and picked me up to take me. I was high. Because in my mind, this is what I had to do because I still had a car. I had a storage shed full of, you know, of stuff that I needed to pay these bills before I could go in. So what did I do? I called my dope man and I told him I needed to get, you know, I needed to sell some stuff and I knew some people that wanted to buy some stuff, right? And so I went, got this, but I was high for the entire weekend. I had to do a 3-day run to do this and to be able to, and I still didn't pay everything that I needed to, but I got high, right? And so, yeah. when I got here, I knew that I wanted to change and I knew that I wanted to do whatever I needed to do, right? I just didn't know what the hell that meant. And so first few days I slept. I was tired. I'd been up. I still had this boyfriend that was in jail, that I had been seeing and I saw him throughout my, yeah, it was kind of, And I was worried about him and, you know, what was going to happen with him, right? Like, that's what I needed to be worrying about. So I remember it was within that first week, and I was, you know, I had already slept off the for a few days, and I wanted to leave. I didn't want to be here. I had stuff to do. And Taylor, if she's here, she always makes fun of me about it, because it's like I always talked about I needed to do these things. I needed to go out there and make some money and do all this stuff. And so I walked into a lecture. Will had this lecture. It was called Shiny Objects. I don't know if he still does that lecture, but talking about the shiny objects that, you know, that distract us, right? And the things that we think that we need to be doing, and the things that, you know, making money and, you know, this person, whatever. And so I don't remember. I just remember that's what kept me. Whatever it was that I heard from him that day, I made the decision to sit still, and I was going to stay in treatment. Michaela, you know, at that point wasn't talking to me, and I still remember every weekend she was here for family visits. As angry as she was with me, she was proud of me for being here. And, you know, one of the things that the impact letters that they have you, you know, your family write, she wrote one. And I still remember one of the things that a couple of things that she wrote was that, you know, she felt like she lost her best friend. And the second thing I remember is that, now I can help. Now you can help people, Mom, but the right way. You know, Sean had already paved this path for me. So she had already been experiencing all these things, and so, you know, I really didn't know exactly what that meant until later on. But she knew, you know, as far as the service work and helping others. So I completed the 28 days, and I was sober for another 2 months, and then I relapsed. And, you know, I had a sponsor. I'd already started working a little bit. I was going to IOP, and I actually, a couple of days after I finished IOP was when I relapsed. But I wasn't working the program. I was going through the motions. I was doing some of the things that they told me to do, but I wasn't. So I was out there for another 5 months. I had started at that point, you know, they talk about how it gets worse, and it did. I started dealing at a pretty high scale. And again, my kids were angry because they knew that I'd relapsed. You know, Marissa, I would see her ever so often, you know, and Michaela and Brandon. You know, my son is, you know, he's got his family and he was doing his thing, but I know, you know, it upset him that I wasn't around. So when I came back into the program, one of the first things that I did was come into the alumni meeting, the Thursday night meeting. That's where I knew I needed to start. I called the sponsor that I had before. I had a peer recovery coach that I had signed up for. I called her, and I still see her. And I knew that it was a matter of life or death, and I needed to work this program. Allie was my sponsor, and I don't know if y'all know who she is. She does the musical journey for the alumni. She was actually a volunteer, and she was pretty active with the alumni at that point. And she was coming into treatment and doing a meditation session for the clients, and that's how I met her. And what I loved about her was her spirituality. I could just see it. And she was very calm, and she was very peaceful, and she was... But I called her and I told her, I need to work these steps. Tell me what to do. And I did what she told me to do. You know, the first time around, I was worried about getting the stuff back. I was worried about getting a job. You know, and I held a couple of jobs in that relapse. After I got sober, one part-time job that I had, I lost. And then I had another job that I just didn't end up showing up, and he fired me. And I'll talk about him in a little bit because there's some relevance there. But I couldn't figure out why I couldn't make anything happen. I'll figure it out, right? How many of y'all? I was always trying to figure things out. And I remember Sean telling you, why don't you just stop trying to figure everything out and just be? And so I didn't know how to be. I didn't know how to do that. I didn't know how to do that. So I got really involved with the alumni. So, yeah, my sober date's August. It's September 3 years ago was the first reunion that I came to here. It was the first time that I came back to the ranch to volunteer, and I helped set up, and Carrie, who was doing Chris's job at the time, I remember I told her she was one of the faces that I saw when I came back into the rooms, and you know, this alumni is the place that I came, that these people didn't judge me, they loved me, they, you know, understood me, they, you know, and Taylor was here, and, you know, Taylor and I went through treatment together, so we've had that connection, and so I started hanging out with Taylor, and I started, you know, I had to leave the old behind, and fill my life up with recovery, and I was willing to do that. I was willing to do that because I wanted to stay sober, and I remember that when I came here for that reunion, and how peaceful that I felt when I came back to this place. You know, I'd already gone through this relapse, and I was in such a bad place. I just didn't know if it was, you know, how can it get better? What, yeah, I was running on faith, listening to others, listening to my sponsor, listening to my peer coach, and having faith that it was going to get better, because I couldn't see it at that point. But you know, when I was out here and listening to the stories, the people that spoke, and all the fellowship, and people laughing, and people enjoying their lives. So that's when I knew. I told Carrie I wanted to get involved. You give me whatever it is that I need to do. At that point, I'd lost my job, so I had started looking for another one, but I wasn't going to make it my main focus. The time I was living with my mother, and as miserable as that was, at least I had a place to stay, right? Yeah, so I had to count my blessings, and that's what I did. I mean, I had to be grateful and stay in gratitude for everything that I had, as basic as it was, okay, and not think about what it is that I didn't have. Carrie started giving me some of the panels to come out and do the, you know, the H&Is and do the Wednesday night panels, and that's when I started coming out here, and I've not stopped since. You know, I still do a Wednesday night panel here, and I do the IOP, alumni panel. You know, I help Chris with trying to plan the events, and I just stay involved. And this has been a lifesaver for me. And, you know, I was doing it every week, doing the panel every week, and finally got some other people involved and other people to take responsibility for, you know, the 3 other weeks, and it's been great. Just because it was pretty overwhelming, you know, doing it every week and living north and doing all. But I still hang on. I'm not done here. I'm going to continue to stay involved because this is what's helped me stay sober. You know, my Marissa, I spent, you know, I continuously spent time with her. My other two children, you know, I was tired of making empty promises to my kids. So I wanted to make sure that I was going to stay sober before I called and started talking to my two older kids. And, you know, I started doing my step work. And I started showing them. I knew that, you know, Sean was in communication with them. So it was a few months before I actually saw Michaela or saw Brandon, because I did not want to go to them and fail them again. You know, the only thing I ever wanted to do was be the best mom that I could be, because I didn't have that when I was growing up. And I felt like I failed my children. You know, my entire life, you know, my life revolved around my kids and you know, their activities and schools and everything that they had to do. And Sean and I did a really good job making sure they had what they needed. And I stopped doing that for them. And so I guess that's the one thing that I've done the most work around, is learning how to forgive myself. Because I'm a human being, and I'm an addict. I can't change anything that I did in the past. All I can do on a daily basis is show my children what I am willing to do today to stay sober and be the best mom that I can be. So, yeah, I got really involved with the alumni. And so let me, you know, the 12 steps are just a recipe for a new life. If you're willing to put the work into working the program, your life will change. You know, and it's, for me, it's been an inside job. I had to look at the inside, you know, from the inside out, and do what was it that made me tick and why, you know, the drugs and the alcohol became the priority. You know, one of the, you know, my daughters sit on panels with us, you know, and we speak as a family in recovery, so they hear it. But, you know, it gotten to a point that, you know, the drugs became more important than my kids, than my work, than anything else. But it's not like that today. And it's because I've worked these steps. And, you know, I got honest with myself. You know, I had to see that there was hope and keep faith in what I was seeing in other people. And I just did what I was supposed to do and what my sponsor told me to do. You know, doing, doing the whole, I'm sorry, I just drew a blank. you know, it gotten to the point when my life was powerless and unmanageable, right? And it wasn't until I got honest with myself that I knew that it was an addict. But today, you know, I'm an addict in recovery. I'm just grateful for this program And I'm going to tell you a little story about, you know, when I realized what it meant to really be living in my own will. So I was probably about 9 months sober, and I was I'd been working for a little bit at that point, and no, I had gotten a full-time job. I was working, and I was ready to get into an apartment. So I applied for this apartment up in North Austin, and you know, the way that I was getting paid, I wasn't on a regular payroll, okay? So, you know, my boss just paid me, you know, through Chase Pay, and he paid me on a weekly basis, and I was doing sales at the time, and so I got, you know, I got just checks directly from the title companies, and so there was no actual paycheck stubs, and that's what they wanted to see. And so I, you know, I tried to tell the lady what I can do is I can show you my bank statements, or I can get a letter of employment, or no, we just need banks. We need paycheck stubs. Well, I don't have paycheck stubs, and so I remember sitting in my office thinking, okay, well, I'll just make some paycheck stubs, right? Let me go ahead and do that, because you know, my ex-husband used to do, you know, he had employees, and so we used to have to do payroll. I know the whole concept, taking taxes out and doing all that stuff, right? And there's these programs on the internet you can download onto your computer, and you can get these, right? And so that's what I decided to do, and this was my bright idea, and so I was going to make these up. And I remember sitting, and it was late. It was like 7 or 8 o'clock. No, it was about 7, because I remember going to an 8 o'clock meeting after that. I was sitting there. I was downloading. I had already made the first paycheck stub, and she only needed two, right? She needed 30 days worth of paycheck stubs, and I was calculating what it was going to need to be and all that stuff. And so that's when I realized this was me living in self-will. I was going to do what I needed to do, right? I can make things happen, because this is what I did before in my addiction, right? I always made things happen. But so I had to stop. I was sweating. I had that knot in my stomach. I was just like, okay, this is not a good thing, and I know this, right? So I stopped what I was doing, and I said, no, I'm not going to do this, right? And I got up. I turned off my computer, and I drove to a meeting. And on my way, I called my sponsor, and she didn't answer. So I called Sean, and I told him, hey, listen to what I was about to do. And I told him, I said, you know, and he was like, okay, that's really great. And then my sponsor called me, so I was like, I'll call you back. And so I talked to her, and I had to tell on myself. I mean, because that's what I do today in my program, is I call when I know that I'm doing something that probably isn't the best idea. I call and tell on myself. And remember, Allie just laughed at me. She just laughed, and she's like, okay, so at least you have the awareness now, right? You are aware of what you're doing. I said, and I'm going to a meeting now, okay? So, and this is how my God works. I went into that meeting, and it was on the third step, right? So turning my will and my life over to, yeah. That was when I realized, that was the first time that I really realized what it was for me to be living in my will. And that, you know, I prayed, and I told myself, I'm gonna send this lady my bank statements, and if I get the apartment, I get the apartment. If I don't, I don't. It's not God's will. So I sent him a copy of my bank statements, and she was like, oh, yeah, let me take this to my manager and let me see. And they approved me for that apartment. And so that's the kind of thing that happens for me whenever I'm not living in my will. And I can see it more today. Early on, you know, it was just me trying to make things happen. I'm just grateful today to know. I mean, I didn't have to do that. I could be honest, and you know, and I can call and tell on myself, and I can, but you know, my old way of thinking. Initially I was thinking that was going to be okay. No, when I did my first set of inventory with my sponsor. It was pretty extensive. She gave me this packet, and I really stayed with, you know, the people in my immediate life, my family, my children, you know, and really looked. You know, I was done with my steps by the time I was about 5 months sober. But, you know, when I got through that four step, it was really an eye-opening experience because I got to see, you know, there's all these people in my life and all of these, you know, relationships that I have, and if I'm having problems with them, you know, what's the common denominator in all of those relationships? It's me. And so I have to look at what I'm doing and not necessarily what they are. And just even like my mother, okay, you know, I have a lot of justified resentments, right? I was being abused as a child. She didn't do anything about it. She was never there for me growing up. You know, all of these things that I had, you know, in my mind that I, you know, were justified, I had to let that shit go. You know, today I have a good relationship with my mom, but it was because, you know, I had to realize that my mom, she did the best that she could with what she knew at the time. And, you know, when I was in my addiction this last time, she just, and I lost everything, she never turned her back on me. She never turned her back on me. You know, there was another time that I think I was in between jobs and I didn't know how I was going to make my car payment. And I was a couple months behind. And Carrie, I went in to see her and I was crying and I was upset and I was only a few months sober. And she told me, she said, it's going to work out. Just keep doing the next right thing. She's like, and use your car for service. If somebody needs a ride, go pick them up. If you, you know, if you can help somebody out, you know, and God will never let you lose that car. I was like, what the hell does that mean? I was not even sure what that meant. I just needed to pay my car note. I prayed, and I just tried to, you know, whatever's going to happen. A few days later, my mother ended up paying both those car notes to help me out. And so, you know, early on, my first, because I had already been using or dealing drugs and making money that way when I was in, just coming into the program, that was always my first thought when I was lacking money or I was in financial fear, was I can go sell some dope. If I had a little bit of money, I could make some more money, right? Yeah. What are the chances of that? And it wasn't probably until after I was a year sober that that wasn't my first thought. And I still remember Taylor was my sponsor at the time, and I still remember the day that I called her, and I was in financial fear, but the first thought wasn't that I was going to go sell some dope. And I was like, wow. Okay, so this is working. My mind is changing a little bit. It takes time. But what I've done is I've just kept faith in everything that I'm doing is going to work out. You know, today I have a great job. I work for a man that I've worked for twice in the last 10 years. He called me a few months ago and he asked me to come back to work for him. I worked for his brother while I was in my addiction, and he fired me because I didn't show up for work. When I went and met with him, he asked me what happened with that, you know, with Charlie, and I said, I was still in my addiction, Greg. So he knows that I'm in sobriety. He knows that I was in treatment. He knows that I lost my house. He knows everything. He knows everything. I don't have to hide who I am. And, you know, I always lived this double life when I was, you know, in my addiction and working this professional job in these offices and thinking I needed to hide who I was, or hide. I don't hide anymore. I've got two amazing grandchildren that I get to spend, you know, time with. All three of my kids are in my life. I love my life today, and it's because I've worked this 12-step program. And I don't have the monopoly on anything. Any of y'all can do this. You know, for y'all that are in treatment, you know, I'm proud of you for being here and for staying. You don't have to stay, but y'all are here. Make the best of it. And it works. It does. I will keep coming back because this is where my life changed. And your life can change too for the better. That's it. Yeah, I'm sorry.